From Charlotte, North Carolina, this is The Recovery Room. I'm Dr. Rick Green. Obesity has reached epidemic proportions and has become a major threat to the health and welfare of millions of children and adolescents worldwide. Here at home, it's estimated that approximately 17% of the pediatric and adolescent populations are considered obese. Obesity in children is also related to other significant maladies, including diabetes, hypertension, liver disease, and cardiac ailments. We know that weight loss surgical procedures are effective and can reduce the associated illnesses brought on by obesity in adults. But should these strategies be used to treat childhood and adolescent obesity? And can these operations accomplish the same positive outcomes in children and adolescents? We'll answer these questions and more with a leading expert in bariatric surgery in children and adolescents up next on The Recovery Room.
Support for this episode of The Recovery Room comes from the American College of Surgeons.
Making sense of modern medicine, this is The Recovery Room. I'm Dr. Rick Green. Today, we will explore the significant problem of obesity in the young and the role of weight loss surgery in the treatment of childhood and adolescent obesity. My guest is a leading pediatric surgeon who specializes in bariatric or weight reduction surgery in children and adolescents. Dr. Mark Michalski is director of bariatric surgery and the surgical director for the Center of Healthy Weight and Nutrition at the Nationwide Children's Hospital in Columbus, Ohio. Mark, welcome to The Recovery Room.
Thank you, Rick, for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, great. I want to maybe start, if we can maybe frame our conversation, and I know you've done a lot of work with this. Can you define for our listeners the scope of the problem in children and adolescents? What are we really dealing with, the group of patients that you deal with in this problem?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. And to begin at the beginning, I think one really has to just familiarize oneself with the scope of the problem in terms of obesity in general. And obviously, we all know that since the CDC has been tracking population-based obesity data since the 1960s in a very formal fashion, that there's been this really meteoric rise, you know, in the order of 3 to 4-fold in general. And certainly the pediatric population has also followed suit when isolated away from the general population. You know, although there has been some encouraging news recently about some leveling off of the obesity problem, we're still left with two really major points to contend with. And the first is that with regards to the pediatric population in general, we're talking about prevalence somewhere in the 16 to 17% of the pediatric population is defined as obese or greater. And, you know, when you talk about something like bariatric surgery, then you're really honing down into the severely obese group, which probably also current data suggests dealing with a prevalence of somewhere in the order of 2 to 7%, which when you do the math comes out to several million children based on their body mass index alone would at least be put into a group that could be considered for candidacy for a surgical mode of therapy.
I think one thing we ought to do is maybe define BMI because there are some that may not know what body mass index means.
What the BMI really is it's a rough estimate of, in the simplest terms, size of a patient. And obviously, when you talk about size, it really relates down to the components of one's body habitus. And so when we talk about obesity, needless to say, the degree of adiposity or the degree of fat or overweightness, if you will, really becomes the most important foundation of these kinds of discussions about what treatment options are appropriate. And so what a body mass index really is it's based on large population and normative data to help us define what really is healthy weight, underweight, overweight, and then in the overweight group itself, that then goes on into a number of different categories, including obesity and severe or morbid obesity, or more recently, classifications of obesity, including class 1, class 2, and class 3. So in the simplest terms, you know, I like to tell people that a normal healthy weight is someone who has a body mass index, which is simply a measure of height and weight, that is somewhere between 18 to 25 kilograms per meter squared. Anything between 25 and 30 is considered at risk for obesity, or in more simple terms, just considered overweight. Anyone who has a BMI of 30 or higher is considered obese, and anyone with a BMI of 35 kilograms per meter squared or higher is considered severe obesity or morbid obesity. And this becomes a significant breakpoint because once you've reached that level of obesity, this number, strictly taken in and of itself, 35 or higher, means that you are, by definition, a candidate at least to have a conversation about surgical intervention.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to ask you. At what particular point do you recommend for an adolescent that an operation would be appropriate?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there are a number of different ways to approach that particular question. And again, I think a little bit of background and history with regards to where these numbers came from is probably worth touching on. And specifically, in the early 1990s, the National Institutes of Health convened a consensus conference of experts in obesity and surgical weight management to define what the specific cut point or cutoff would be in the adult world with regards to when is it that you exactly start to offer people this as an option as opposed to diet, exercise, behavior modification. 35 really has shaken out as a threshold for several reasons. The first is that when you look at the type of comorbid conditions that patients have, when you compare patients who are above or below 35, people who have BMI of 35 or higher tend to have a much higher prevalence of a number of different risk factors, including things like high blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, liver disease, sleep disorder, including obstructive sleep apnea, and so on and so forth. And so the prevalence of these types of risk factors that ultimately affect the longitudinality of one's life as a consequence of chronic disease really goes much higher. And I think that needs to be counterbalanced with the fact that when you become an individual or you look at groups of individuals who are in this very high category of body mass index, the more conventional non-surgical methods of weight loss tend to work much less successfully. So diet, behavior modification, exercise, the likelihood of those things leading to not only weight loss but durable weight loss, the likelihood of that drops tremendously.
So that allows us then to get into maybe we've discussed this problem with a parent or certainly an adolescent. What are the risks going forward after the operation that you really would discuss?
Yeah. You know, and this really is a great topic of interest and a great topic that is the focus of some ongoing research right now in terms of long-term data. So if you look at the current literature in adolescent bariatric surgery, we really see a field of clinical science that is in the process of evolving. What we know about the risks and benefits of bariatric surgery for kids is that, at least in the short term, the potential complications that occur in the adult world are very, very similar as to what we're seeing in the pediatric world. There are some concerns that the adolescent age group certainly has the potential, and there is some data to support the observation that they may face a more challenging future in terms of nutrition, micro and macronutrient preservation, and partially depending upon the type of operation that they get. But in general, the conclusion thus far is that these operations are safe and efficacious, at least equal to, you know, what we're seeing in much larger and more longitudinally robust adult studies.
Well, what about cognition? What about the ability to do well in school after these operations?
Yeah, that's a really burgeoning field in terms of the need for good data. You know, there's some data that is probably more descriptive and anecdotal, showing that many of these patients go on to college and sort of lead the type or accomplish the type of, you know, life benchmarks that we all hope that all of our children accomplish, going to school, getting married, getting a job. There have not been, to date, any robust studies looking at these things in a more formal fashion. That being said, probably the most significant information that's coming out in terms of quality of life right now, using a number of different quality of life metric analyses, is certainly showing that at baseline, many of these children are very disabled in terms of their quality of life. Many of these kids are homeschooled. Obviously, there's concern for being socially ostracized, and or bullied. But that, as one might expect, as the body habitus changes and self-image factors come into play, that there seems to be a more easy transition into adulthood, and again, with the ability to hopefully integrate into sort of the mainstream benchmarks that everybody wants to achieve.
Mark, what about a young girl, an adolescent girl, or parents of a young girl asking about future pregnancy after having an obesity surgery?
You know, this is a great question, and we get this question all the time. And again, sort of leaning on a little bit of education, background education, you know what I always start to tell or always start to remind patients of when asked that question is really, what are the odds of any individual successfully becoming pregnant and maintaining a pregnancy to term if they do not engage in some way of, you know, shedding this excess body weight that they're dealing with? And there are a number of large studies that show an inverse correlation between obesity and fertility. So starting with the knowledge that as an obese young lady, you're already facing the challenges of fertility. By definition alone, just losing a significant amount of weight should improve that. With regard specifically to bariatric surgery, then we get into a less defined field. We've had many of our patients, both here in Columbus, as well as many of my colleagues around the country, that have gone on to see their postoperatively successful bariatric patients go on to have healthy pregnancies with healthy children. So I absolutely remain encouraged that this is one of the benefits of bariatric surgery, the ability to start a family. And that being said, obviously, with any bariatric patient, any female bariatric patient, that is, we always caution patients, and especially in the teenage age group, that family planning is very, very important. It's critically important not to get into a situation where pregnancy occurs during the immediate postoperative period because of the obvious potential bad consequences of trying to battle weight loss and have a healthy pregnancy at the same time. And we've seen very good results with regards to that.
Since I'm a surgical oncologist, I've been sort of interested in the bariatric story about potentially the reduction in cancer long-term in patients who have had weight reduction surgery. Is there any data to suggest that if an adolescent or a child gets these procedures, we might expect less malignancy in the future?
I mean, I think that that is certainly a good theoretic jumping-off point, and obviously there have been large studies that show the association between obesity and the development of cancer in large population analyses. I am not specifically aware of any studies defining relatedness between specific weight loss and reduction in longitudinal prevalence of the development of certain types of cancers, but certainly this is an area that is ripe for investigation and certainly will be very important to understand what the ramifications are.
Finally, Mark, let me ask you, if there's parents listening to this and they're concerned about their own child or adolescent child, and they want to go to some place that does this, what are the characteristics of the surgeon or the institution that should be sought out to do this type of surgical procedure?
Right. And thank you for asking that. I think it's really a very important set of issues. You know, as I mentioned, adolescent bariatric surgery is, as we know, a relatively young and emerging field of surgical intervention. And really, I think what's happened over the last 1 to 2 decades is we've, I think, been fortunate enough to develop a generally accepted consensus that adolescent bariatric surgery really needs to be administered through a multidisciplinary approach, and that multidisciplinary approach really needs to have attached to it adolescent or pediatric specific specialists who are trained to deal with the nuances of being a teenager. And while a adult bariatric surgeon is perfectly capable of doing the operation, it's really much, much more than that. And so what we've developed is guidelines that have recently been published both by the American Society of Metabolic Surgery and have been reiterated most recently by the American College of Surgeons through the new MBSA QIP program. which, for those not familiar with that, it is the newly minted national accreditation program for bariatric surgery, which for the first time has a separate designation for adolescent bariatric surgery or centers performing adolescent bariatric surgery. And the key fundamentals to centers that offer that type of surgery, again, are centers that have the resources that allow someone who is a teenager to really benefit from the multidisciplinary approach of teenage medicine, you know, rather than adult medicine. And I think that that's probably a very important point.
Those are excellent recommendations. Mark, it's been a pleasure to have you on the Recovery Room.
Thank you, Rick. It's been a pleasure to be here.
We've been talking with Dr. Mark Makowski, Director of Bariatric Surgery and the Surgical Director for the Center of Healthy Weight and Nutrition at the Nationwide Children's Hospital in Columbus, Ohio. I'm Dr. Rick Green. Thanks for listening to The Recovery Room.
The Recovery Room is supported by the American College of Surgeons. The producer is Tina Simmons. Technical support provided by Jim Losby. Find us on the web at facs.org/recoveryroom.